Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Hello and a warm welcome to this edition of Africa Link, coming to you live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Jen Ayeko-Kumet. Do remember to join the conversation on the several topics that we are covering today on our Facebook page, that's DW Africa. On the program today, Kenyan victims of lead poisoning will have to wait longer to see justice as their case fails to take off in a Mombasa court.
We came to court for hearing of the petition today. But when we were in court, we were served with an application on behalf of another group of people who are saying that they also want to join the case as the respondents. That means as people opposing the case.
The head of the United Nations Development Programme, Achim Steiner, has urged authorities in Zimbabwe to follow the law to the beat when conducting elections scheduled between July and August this year and to ensure they meet international standards as promised by President Mnangagwa.
It is the responsibility of the government and the institutions of governance in Zimbabwe to ensure that this election is to take place in line with the constitutional provisions.
These are some of the stories that we've lined up for you, but first, here's a chance to listen to some other news items making headlines around the world.
I'm Kai Dombach with the DW News. Russian President Vladimir Putin was re-elected to his fourth term on Sunday. The vote was not close, as Putin won more than three-quarters of the vote. Putin took the time to thank his supporters after the votes were tallied.
I see this victory as an outcome of everything we have wished to do under difficult circumstances in recent years. This is the evaluation of the results of our work. Second is trust that we will do together, and third is hope. Hope for what we are talking about will be done.
Staying with Putin, the Russian president continued to deny that Russia was behind the poisoned former spy and his daughter in the UK. In his first public comments since the poisoning, Putin said it was, quote, drivel, rubbish, and nonsense, end quote, that someone would commit to such an attack just before the election and the FIFA World Cup. The big soccer competition will be held in Russia this summer. UK Prime Minister Theresa May remained steadfast in her belief that Russia was behind the spy's poisoning. May said an independent research team has arrived and will be investigating the incident.
They'll be talking to the police about the samples that they can take, because we want to ensure that this nerve agent is independently verified. That's the job they'll be doing. They'll be obviously talking about what samples they need to have access to, and we will ensure that we make sure that they have what they need to be able to independently verify this nerve agent.
At least 17 people have died in Madagascar after a tropical storm swept through the country over the weekend. More than 1,000 homes were flooded or destroyed, as were many bridges. The National Bureau of Risk Management and Disasters said the death toll could rise as workers continue to dig through the destruction left in the storm's wake. This news comes to you from Deutsche Welle, Germany's international public broadcaster. United States President Donald Trump is expected to announce his plan to stem opioid addiction in the country later today. His plan will likely include stiffer penalties against drug traffickers, including the death penalty where appropriate under current law. Trump will share the details of his plan in the northeastern state of New Hampshire, which has been hit hard by the use and abuse of opioids. The UK and EU have agreed on most issues that would allow the UK to push forward with leaving the European Union. The agreement keeps all EU rules in Britain through the end of 2020. This will give time for the UK to further determine its relationship with the EU. There are still unresolved issues, including the Irish border, as EU Brexit Secretary David Davis explained.
But it remains our intention to achieve a partnership that's so close as to not require specific measures in relation to Northern Ireland, and therefore we will engage in detail on all the scenarios set out in the joint report. We have also reached consensus on the full set of issues which need to be addressed in any solution in order to avoid a hard border, which is why, last week, we set out a work programme to tackle them.
Zimbabwean President Emmerson Mnangagwa named hundreds of mines, Chinese businesses, and people he says illegally transferred foreign currency abroad during Robert Mugabe's rule. Mnangagwa's announcement comes after the three-month amnesty for the return of funds expired. Authorities believe Zimbabwe lost at least $1.4 billion in revenue due to illegal foreign currency transfers. For more news and information, please visit our website at dw.com. I'm Kai Dombach.
You're still listening to DW's Africa Link program, live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Jane Ayeko-Kumet. And we start the program in the East African country of Kenya, where victims of what has come to be known as the Owino Uhuru-led saga have been waiting for justice in vain. In 2007, the Kenyan metal refinery APZ set up a smelting factory in the neighborhood known as Owino Uhuru. In the years that followed, 20 workers and 100 children died of lead poisoning and pollution. Today, as their case was said to be heard in court in Mombasa, many of them thought justice would finally be served, but this was not to be. Diana Wanyonyi sent us this report, now voiced by Eddie Maika Jr.
While in court, another group emerged, also claiming to be victims of lead poisoning. The lawyers representing the two groups failed to reach an agreement.
We came to court for hearing of the petition today, but when we were in court, we were served with an application on behalf of another group of people who are saying that they also want to join the case as the respondents. That means as people opposing the case. Now, when we looked at the application, my clients realized that the basis of that application is false. Some of my clients are listed in that application as if they are making that application, and they are saying they did not. Because of that, they want to oppose that application.
We want to join the case of Owino Uhuru because the proposed list we have are the genuine owners of that parcel of land after a tedious court litigation. It is not mischief. It is not trying to scuttle the petition. We want to be in the petition.
The victims are asking for the equivalent of 13 million euros in compensation for health problems and to clean up contaminated land. The factory was closed in 2014, but Owino Uhuru is said to have high levels of lead in both water and soil, and the victims have not been relocated.
That report was sent in by Diana Wanyonyi, who was following it up in the Mombasa court, where it actually did not take place. I mean, the two lawyers representing the two groups were kind of not in agreement, and this forced the judge to adjourn the case until May.
Yes, Jane, the story is trending on social media platforms, especially Facebook. I can see right here, residents of the Owino Uhuru affected with the lead poisoning have now asked the Mombasa County Governor Hassan Joho to assist them in accessing medical care and drugs. And, you know, just to remind our listeners, Hassan Joho is one of the lead opponents of current President Uhuru Kenyatta.
And certainly we've been covering that story not only on radio, but also on our social media platform, as well as on our website, online and TV. So you can catch up a lot more by visiting our page, DW Africa.
Vladimir Putin has been re-elected to a fourth term as Russia's president. That's a story that is in all media news outlets in the world at the moment. Final results gave him more than three quarters of the vote, his biggest victory yet. Many say Putin's win was a foregone conclusion. That's after his most serious rival, opposition leader Alexei Navalny, was banned from the race. Officials say the president garnered almost 77% of the vote, with an estimated turnout of 67%. The Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe was quick and to say there was no real choice in Russia's presidential election and complained it had been marked by pressure on critical voices. Before we came on air, I spoke to Mikhail Bushev, an editor with DW's Russian service, on the results.
It was not a surprise at all. I mean, the Germans Daily Bild congratulated him a day before the election. It was a kind of political trolling, but it was somehow so obvious. So basically, he formally won and secured next 6 years, but everybody knew he would win.
And how have Wardilas been reacting to his re-election, even in areas like Crimea that Russia annexed?
Well, they kept very low-key. They basically accepted the fact that he's here to stay the next 6 years, mm-hmm. and that they have to deal with him despite the Crimea, even despite the orchestrating the elections, etc., etc.
What is next for his domestic opponents like Alexei Navalny, who are largely resigned to another 6 years in the shadows of Putin's dominance of Russian politics?
Yeah, the political field in Russia is basically erased. There is not much political activity which is not controlled or monitored to some extent by the Kremlin. So these coming 6 years are not really comfortable time for his opponents. Basically, you have to say independent political activity in Russia isn't welcomed.
Relations between Russia and the West are already at their lowest level since the collapse of the Soviet Union 26 years ago. Is this to you another new Cold War looming?
This is not looming. We are deeply into the new Cold War or whatever you call it. Mm-hmm. We are in a confrontation and Russia is perfectly aware of it. So the West should accept that we are in a big confrontation, which is for years to stay.
I was speaking to Mikhail Bushev, an editor with DW's Russian service. Now, Jen, Putin got 77% of the vote. I thought this was a reserve for African countries. Over to you now.
Yes, indeed. I mean, it's not limited. Politics is not limited to the Western world or to Putin alone. I mean, this story just reminds me of what is happening in Burundi, where President Pierre Nkurunziza has set 17th May as the date for the referendum. Now, I can tell you, if this referendum actually is voted pro, mm-hmm. that means, because it doesn't take into consideration the past terms, it means that President Nkurunziza could actually be in power until 2034.
Because it starts afresh. And we posted this story on our Facebook page. Many of you have been debating about it. Ramsey Jayze says, Africa with the corrupt leaders.
And Dennis Luanja says, this is a man who has been hanging on power forever. He's been selfish and cruel.
Our usual contributor, Isaac Hosa-Godwin, says, oh, this is another tyrant we need to get rid of. Freedom of speech has been under siege and no one has the power to stand up against him.
And perhaps it's time to equate politics to the ongoing developments in social media. And Amankwa Pasi here says, maybe if we tell Nkurunziza that a brain is an app, he will start using his brain.
Okay, I like the iron about that. Keep the comments flowing on our Facebook page, DW Africa, and a debate as well.
And we keep it right here in Africa and in Zimbabwe. President Emmerson Mnangagwa, shortly after taking office, announced that the presidential elections would be held in January. While the UN is already engaged in a preparatory process with the Zimbabwean Electoral Commission. The United Nations Development Programme Chief, Achim Steiner, was in Zimbabwe where DW's Columbus Mavunga caught up with him to talk about the upcoming elections. Take a listen.
First and foremost, it is the responsibility of the government and the institutions of governance in Zimbabwe to ensure that this election is to take place in line with the constitutional provisions. Our role is to support the country with technical assistance, for instance, on the technology used for biometric voter registration, working also with the Ministry of Justice in assisting and advising on the new electoral law that is being submitted to Parliament to align it with the Constitution. This is a critical condition.
You met civil society, you met the opposition, you met the ruling party. What concerns did these people bring to you?
Some key issues that were raised were the enabling environment. A free election has a number of prerequisites: equitable access to the media, communications, voter education, but also confidence in the integrity of the voting process. So some issues that are being debated right now are the production of ballots, for instance, but also the essential commitment by all political leaders.
You are going back to New York after this. If you had to meet someone in New York tomorrow, I mean, the day after you arrive, what would you say? Where is Zimbabwe now? What is happening in Zimbabwe?
Zimbabwe is in a significant moment of political transition, but also, I think, a moment in which the hope that a free, fair and credible election will allow Zimbabweans to choose their leader for the coming years is now a palpable prospect. The economic reality of this country also dictates that urgent actions for economic recovery are initiated. However, these will in part depend on the outcome of this election in terms of its credibility, its integrity, because it will signal, first of all, to Zimbabweans that the prospect of national unity in support of national development is possible. Secondly, to international partners, to investors, it will also signal that there is reason to have confidence in the future development of Zimbabwe and therefore also as a destination for investment.
UNDP Chief Achim Steiner speaking to DW's Columbus Mavunga in Harare. And all eyes are on Zimbabwe. We too are hoping that the elections go free and fair and smoothly. Welcome back to DW Africa. My name is Jane Ayeko-Kumet.
And I'm Isaac Mugabe, and we're also live on Facebook, our Facebook page, DW Africa. Remember to keep the debate flowing on the topics that we will be covering in this part of the news. Coming up in the next 15 minutes, non-communicable diseases on the rise in Uganda. We hear from a health worker.
We have found that obesity is increasing among the women over the last 15 years, and a slight increase among the men. Then also among the children, it was 3.4 5 years ago, and now it's 3.7.
We still have much more to come, including sports, collected results from the CAF Champions League, you know, the next phase of the 16. But before all that, Africa's leaders will gather in Rwanda on Wednesday to launch what they say will be the world's largest free trade area. But Nigeria has already pulled out, highlighting the challenge in getting the continent to sign up. Establishing the African Continental Free Trade Area, or commonly known as CFTA, with 55 African Union members, having a GDP of almost $2.5 trillion, is one of the bloc's flagship projects. However, Muhammadu Buhari, president of one of Africa's largest markets, Nigeria, this week cancelled plans to attend the Kigali launch and called for more consultations after business leaders objected to joining the world's biggest free trade area in terms of countries. DW's Obale Musa spoke to Sunny Yan Daki, Deputy Director General of the National Association Chamber of Commerce, Industry, Mines and Agriculture in Nigeria on Buhari's withdrawal from the AU summit on a free trade zone.
I think the federal government of Nigeria has done the right thing. It has taken the right decision. The reason why I say so is this. Nigeria is still a developing economy. The infrastructure that are really critical to manufacturing, they are really not there in Nigeria today. And most of these African countries that are pushing for the CFTA, countries like Morocco, like Egypt, Tunisia, these countries, yes, in terms of size, population, and landmass, they may be smaller than Nigeria. In terms of natural resources, too, they may be smaller, you know, in comparison to Nigeria. But I tell you, in terms of development, they are far ahead, one. And secondly, they have a free trade agreement with Europe, you know, in view of their proximity to Europe. And thirdly, no manufacturing activities can take place effectively if you do not have power, if you cannot generate adequate power needed for these industries to function. These countries, they have steady power 24 hours, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. In Nigeria, what volume do we generate in Nigeria? Less than 7,000 kilowatt. And secondly, that 7,000 is not even enough for the textile industries, even in Kaduna. In Kaduna, we have close, well, more than 25, 27 textile industries. You can imagine their demand for electricity there. So we need to do more in power generation so that our factories now will have enough power to use to create their products.
Some would argue that free trade among African countries is going to enhance a lot of interaction among different African countries. If Nigeria is going to opt out, does that mean Nigeria is not interested in all this?
If we allow other countries to bring in their goods into Nigeria, countries that have comparative advantage in terms of competence, in terms of technology, in terms of power generation, in terms of competence and skills, certainly they are going to produce products that are more qualitative than the product produced in Nigeria. Then what happens to the industries in Nigeria if nobody buys their products? They will collapse.
That was our correspondent Obale Musa speaking to Sunny Yan, Deputy Director General of the Chamber of Commerce in Nigeria. Now, some of you have been reacting to Buhari's withdrawal from the summit or the signing of the free trade area. Izu Oti wrote on her Facebook page saying Nigeria is feeling the impact of the African Commission on Human Rights ruling against Nigeria. And of course, Ngum Gafo comes in and says Africa is not Nigeria. They will simply start without him.
That's an interesting one.
Yeah, he thinks that Nigeria should start, you know, joining such, you know, collaboration with other countries, like signing the CFTA without Buhari.
I think it's not a bad idea. I mean, we can see it here with the Brexit. The EU is not about to collapse. So probably if President Kagame is good at it and they agree to sign, Nigeria will see the benefits and probably sign at a later stage.
And surprisingly, Jen, other comments coming in on our Facebook page. People are having an interesting dialogue there. Prince Ike says, It's important, yes, but Africa cannot grind to a halt for Nigeria. The latter depends on it too. They're like, Buhari should actually have attended, you know, the summit and at least perhaps say, well, we are not ready to sign, but at least attending it. Well, all I can say is keep that debate flowing on our Facebook page, as usual, DW Africa, and we'll always read your comments whenever we can. We'll be back right after this.
Health check.
Avoid fast foods and eat healthy. This call was made by the World Health Organization and was directed at developing countries. The increase of non-communicable diseases has been attributed to high consumption of fast foods and beverages such as soda. In Uganda, government has launched the National Information Platform for Nutrition to promote good feeding and regulate the consumption of foods like chips, chicken and pizza. Frank Yeager with that report.
I am in Chibuye Market in the outskirts of the Ugandan capital, Kampala. It is one of the busiest markets around, and I want to find out how much they know about the health dangers of recycling cooking oil for days and eating deep-fried foods. Here, I meet Kasim Magembe. He owns a fast food restaurant.
They talk a lot, alleging that I recycle cooking oil, but my customers have never stopped eating my snacks because they are delicious. No one has come out to complain of any health complications because of my cooking oil. That is only hearsay.
Due to poor eating habits, obesity is increasing among urban dwellers, as Pamela Kakande of Uganda Bureau of Statistics explains.
We have found that obesity is increasing among the women over the last 15 years, and a slight increase among the men. Then also among the children, it was 3.4 5 years ago, and now it's 3.7. And Chigezi has 9%, which is far much higher than the national average of 3.7%.
I spoke to Mili Namanda, a social worker with the local organization in Mukono town. She tells me chips, chaps and chicken are her ideal meal.
I actually eat it every day. It's fast. It's kind of classy to have such food. I don't waste time preparing a long meal. It's tasty, actually, because of the spice that they use. I actually prefer packing it for my kids because when they reach school, they don't feel funny about what they have in their containers.
Professor David Sully, a renowned nutritionist, knows the dangers of such foods.
Now, whatever you're going to eat, ask yourself, does it have the nutrients I need? If they don't have, then don't eat. If you talk about fast foods and so soft drinks, all those are for fast food, fast kill means fast kill. So people should be very careful when they are eating. What you eat, it's you. You should make our food our own medicine. Make sure you eat the right food at the right time, in the right amounts. You can find somebody eating roasted chicken alone or deep fried. So we reduce a lot of cholesterol, then you end up with a clot, then paralysis.
Dr. Albert Lule of the Ministry of Health hopes that regulating the consumption of fast foods will achieve positive results.
The money which you spend to treat undernutrition is far less than what we spend on treating non-communicable diseases. So the best thing is to prevent it. Create awareness, sensitize the communities, and we hope to use various avenues. Our entry point, if you use the schools, is a very good opportunity. We may use the mass media, threat-based organizations, because there is a threat.
During the launch of the National Information Platform for Nutrition, the government chief whip Ruth Nankabira said the government is committed to prioritize nutrition as a catalyst to good health.
Too much chips, too much, you know, deep fried chicken, too much. You are going to fall sick. So this platform which we have launched is going to help us disseminate information on good feeding. And when we do that successfully, we will be curing the non-communicable diseases.
Frank Yeager in Kampala sent us that report. Now, Isaac, talking about healthy food, are you one of those persons who actually, you know, watches whatever you eat?
Exactly, because just like the doctor said, those who opt out to go for deep fried chicken or chips and chicken, like you put it, the money they spend on that, on those, you know, not so nice foods, according to him, not me, is far higher than the money or much bigger than, you know, the money that they spend on treatment. And the advice he had for them is watch what you eat, especially from the places that you go to for a quick bite. Keep the debate flowing on what you think is healthy for you. And as usual, the debating platform is our page, DW Africa. Now, every Monday, we bring you another dose of sports. And this time, it's a roundup of African sports over the weekend that took place on the continent. There were plenty of shocks coupled with drama after top African clubs were ejected out of the CAF Champions League. One of them is ASEC Mimosas of the Ivory Coast, which flopped at home, and fellow former African title winners V Club of the DRC also bowed out of the CAF Champions League on Sunday. It was another chance for minnows from other regions to shine, as Samson Omale in Lagos reports.
For the first time in the history of the Premier Continental Club Championship, KCCA of Uganda, Mbambane Swallows of Swaziland, Township Rollers of Botswana and Horoya of Guinea became the first clubs from their countries to reach the group phase of the African Champions League. Mike Mutumbi is the manager of KCCA FC.
We are among the big boys, and we are going to do what the big boys are supposed to do. Because now, this experienced team, now you could see the difference between last season and this season. We had players who would think were experienced but not educated about how we're supposed to play.
Angola's Primeiro de Agosto is also in the group stage for the first time since 1997. Mamelodi Sundowns of South Africa and Zambia's ZESCO complete the Southern African trio. Tunisia also has two representatives, Etoile du Sahel and Esperance, just as Algeria, ES Satif and MC Alger. Record winners Al Ahly will carry high the flag of Egypt, whilst TP Mazembe of DR Congo stages a comeback after missing out on the party last year. Meanwhile, the draw will take place on Wednesday, the 21st of March 2018 in Cairo, Egypt. President of Zimbabwe Football Association and CAF Vice President Philip Chiangwa says the Confederation of African Football is optimistic that Africa will do well at the World Cup and that Africa Football Governing Body is working on a long-term development goal.
I think there's been so many changes since Ahmad came into office, and zones are now getting money, you know, which was never the case. And there is freedom of speech. There's now a democratic CAF which is serving the people.
In athletics, Alpha Baraka of Egypt won the 5th Africa Cross Country Championships, which came to a close at the weekend in Chelif, Algeria. Baraka, who won the 10 km race in 30 minutes and 47 seconds to earn his maiden major victory, explains how he narrowly beat Julius Kongo, his compatriot, who was given the same record time for his first major victory.
It is our race that we love and we like it. I use a mind that I supposed to win the race. So when he was in front of me, I tried how strong he was. But I see in the finishing, I saw he was slow in somewhere. So I tried to kick. I come position one.
In the women's category, another Kenyan, 18-year-old running phenomenon, Selefini Chespol, won the African Cross Country Championship senior women's title in the Algerian city of Chelif.
Samson Omale with the sports roundup.
Now, connections or qualifications? How do young people get jobs in your country? This is our debate for you on our social media platform on our 77% project. Now, go there and share the conversation. And some of you have already been doing that.
Yes, indeed. Qualifications or no qualifications, connections, yes, or whatever you may want it. We start off with Anthony from Tanzania, who says there is a platform for applying for a job. Then a selection is made for those who meet qualifications.
Interesting. And Nguma Nafu says, sad, but it's true. Most places in the world, you need connections.
And Nkimi Sangwe says, Cameroon, it's all about connections. Nothing like qualifications exist. No matter how qualified you are, you still need the connection.
Interesting. How are things in Rwanda?
Well, I don't know there at the moment, but of course we have job portals and, well, qualifications matter. I mean, in all aspects, maybe the connection might come, but of course you must have the qualifications.
I think it's better to be connected only when you have the qualifications.
Okay, well said, yeah. Prophet Anyangwe Sebastian says connections, qualification is not needed in Cameroon. Well, keep the debate flowing. I like it, Jen, on our Facebook page, DW Africa. And with that, we come to the end of the show. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Jen Ayeko Kumet.
Bye for now.